Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nafiomi. My name is Adina Schmidman. Please join us this Thursday as we celebrate the completion of Sifrei Nevi'im with a virtual tour around key places in Eretz Yisrael with Rivi Frankel. If you have not yet received a flyer, please email ouwomen@ou.org. Our journey continues with Sefer Yeshayahu as we begin learning the Nevi'im Achronim. As Sefer Yeshayahu is 66 prakim long, we will be switching educators today. Thank you to Mrs. Jacqueline Silva for your erudite and passionate presentation. Prakim Chaf Aleph 21 through Mem will be taught by Mrs. Rivka Alter, and Prakim Mem Aleph 41 through Samach Vav 66 by Mrs. Tzipora Weinberg. Much continued Hatzlacha with your learning. And now for Perek Chaf Aleph 21.
Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Alter, and today we will be studying Yeshayahu Perek Chaf Aleph 21. Perek Chaf Aleph starts off with the word masa, which means something heavy. It's a heavy prophecy. And this is a word that's familiar to us, just as we use the word masa in the prakim before with masa Mitzrayim and masa Damesek, masa Moav, all the way back to Perek Yud Gimel with masa Bavel. The nation that's the subject of our perek is referred to as Midbar Yam. Rashi immediately identifies the words Midbar Yam as referring to the nation of Bavel once again. And these first 10 psukim of the perek are a nevuah about Bavel and about their downfall. Rashi comments that it's common sometimes for the same prophetic content to be expressed in different styles and with different language. And Radak mentions that because Bavel were such a terrible nation, the ones who are going to lead us into our first exile and destroy the first Beis HaMikdash, the nevuah of their destruction and their downfall is repeated again here, even though it was first introduced in Perek Yud Gimel. Why are they called Midbar Yam? A few explanations. One is based on the word Yam, which means the direction of west, that they're going to be overtaken by nations that are going to travel west to do so. The nations to the east of Bavel, Paras Umadai, Persia and Media, are going to come west and overthrow the Babylonian Empire. Some also point out that Bavel is found and is situated on the Euphrates River, Nahar Prat, a very prominent body of water, wide as an ocean. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra suggests that Midbar Yam, the Yam we're talking about is Nahar Prat, and that's why Bavel is being referred to by this name. Yeshayahu communicates in Pasuk Bet that this is Chazut Kasha, this is a harsh prophecy that is being told to him and that is going to come upon the Babylonians. And what's going to happen to them is exactly what they did to assume power in the first place. The traitor is going to be betrayed. Ha-boged boged ve-ha-shoded shoded. The plunderer shall be plundered. Although Bavel originally broke treaties with other nations, Koresh, the king of Persia, will do the same thing to the king of Bavel. And what's interesting to note is here we're being told of the downfall of Bavel even before historically they come to power. The name Elam, which is referred to as the city of Shushan, known from the Purim story, and the word Madai, the nation of Madai, is also mentioned in Pasuk Bet as taking over. We're told that as the rule of Bavel comes to an end, there will be no more sighs from the people. There will be some sense of relief. Pasuk Gimel is interesting in that it talks about terrible pain and trembling. Al kein mal'u matnai chalchala. Therefore, my loins are filled with trembling. Tzirim achazuni. Pangs have seized me. Kitzirei yoleda. Like the pangs of someone giving birth. Ne'eveti mishmoa. I have become confused from listening. Nivhalti merot. I'm frightened from listening and from seeing what's going to happen to Bavel. Who is trembling and who is in pain? Many point out that this may be from the perspective of the Babylonians themselves when they're being overturned. And others want to say that this is actually the Navi himself, Yeshayahu, who is actually expressing personal feelings of unhappiness at the downfall of Babel, even though they were our oppressors, similar to the Pesach Seder when we don't want to play up the loss of human lives of the Egyptians. So to hear, Yeshayahu is expressing his pain in the fact that lives have to be lost and the Babylonians have to be brought down in this manner. Psukim Dalet and Hey talk about fear, which will come to replace happiness on a specific night. And Rashi, following the lines of the Midrash, points out that this may be referring to the downfall of Babel, as seen by King Belshazzar, who miscalculated the famous 70 years of their rule. And when they believed that their calculation of 70 years was over and the Jews were still under their domain, they celebrated. And then in the middle of the party, we know about the famous writing on the wall that appeared, which is interpreted by Daniel and appears in Sefer Daniel, Perek Hey, Chapter 5. The words Mina, Mina, Tekal, Ufarsin, which wasn't understood until Daniel shed light on it and explained how it's the impending defeat of Babel by Paras and Madai. So the night that turns to tragedy. Psukim Zion through Tet, 7 through 9, talk about the Babylonians now setting up lookouts to see the progress of the enemy coming, the apprehension they now know that they now feel in that the enemy is going to overtake them soon. And animals are discussed. First, the psukim talk about a pair of animals, a donkey and a camel, which represents Paras and Madai. And also there's the image of a lion, the Aryeh, which comes up as well, ready to pounce. Rashi brings in an interesting explanation for the lion, not referring to the nations that are going to take over Babel, but actually referring to the Navi Chavakuk, one of the Treyasar, who prayed for the downfall of the Babylonians and was actually very upset with Hashem for allowing the Babylonians to have power for as long as they did. And therefore, we're now invoking we're bringing in Chavakuk to witness the downfall of Babel that's about to happen. Just if you want to check it out on your own, the gematria of the name Chavakuk and the word Aryeh, lion, which appears in the psukim in front of us, are the same. In Pasuk Tet, the message is relayed twice for emphasis, actually, that indeed Babel is going to fall. Nafla, nafla, Babel. Right? Babel will certainly fall. And all of their idols, v'chol psilei Eloheha shibar la'aretz, will be broken to the ground, will fall down, and the nation themselves will be threshed as wheat. The Dat Mikra teaches an alternate way of understanding this nevuah, which differentiates it from the earlier Masa back in Perek Yud Gimel about Babel, by explaining that the account in our Perek is referring to the downfall of Babel in the hands of Sancheirev. As Merodach Baladan, king of Babel, rebels against the kingdom of Ashur during the time period of Yeshayahu in around the year 689 BCE, and their idols were destroyed at that time. If we look at these psukim in this manner, then the messaging to the Jewish nation is different. Instead of rejoicing over the eventual fall of Babel at the end of their 70-year galut, the people are being informed that Sancheirev is going to be the victor in this battle between the nations, and they should not form an alliance with Babel to defeat Ashur. Even though they have a common enemy, it's not to their benefit. And we will see this play out later in Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Tet. The Gezerah has been made, and the nation was rejoicing, as we saw in the Psukim talking about a party, over their diplomatic alliance, and are really being informed that it's not a cause for celebration and overconfidence. The Navi brings in Madai and Elam, those nations, in a mocking way, saying they can come help Babel, but it's really all in vain because none of that is really going to matter on the world scene and the end, and Sancheirev is the one who's going to take over, and Ashur is going to overpower everyone at that time. Of course, we can see and appreciate the pain and trepidation that gripped Yeshayahu as he had to deliver this message to the people. And so in these first 10 psukim, we can see several messages that Yeshayahu is trying to convey. In Pasuk Yud Aleph 11, we shift to one of the shortest nevuot, only 2 psukim long, another Masa, that of Masa Duma. Radak identifies Duma as the descendants of Yishmael, as this name appears in Bereshit Perek Chafhei 25, as the name of one of the children of Yishmael. Alternatively, others like Rashi say Duma is identified as Edom, which can be seen in Yechezkel, Perek Chaf Zayin, 27. The Midrash identifies Edom as Rome or Seir, and we know that that is the galut that we're technically still in today, going back to the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Abarbanel says that Rome is specifically referred to as Duma based off the shoresh of the word. One could be based off of the word domeim, that we're astonished, standing still. We have no idea when this galut will end. And also some interpret dome from the word hope, that we never lose hope for a future redemption. This nation reaches out to Yeshayahu as a messenger of Hashem to find out what is going to be from the darkness, from this exile. Some of the words of the Navi's response in Pasuk Yud Bet are a little bit strange and not typical Hebrew. The first part of the Pasuk should sound familiar. Amar Shomer, Ata Boker, Vigam Laila. The Shomer, the one standing guard, possibly the Navi, is saying that morning will come and then also night will come afterwards. Morning referring to redemption, night referring to galut. And in this first part of Pasuk Yud Bet, which we say also at the end after we say Havdalah in Hamavdil, in the piyut of Hamavdil, after Havdalah, we're basically talking about possibly the fact that we're saying Daya Litzara Bishata, that it's like enough to focus on one Sarah, to focus on one misfortune at a time, and we don't need to worry now, even though there will be further darkness and further night in the future. Rashi understands these words to be talking about the fact that we always, as humans, have the possibility of galut or geula, and there's a process. If we do tshuva, then geula can come sooner. We have the power to shorten it if we want it enough. The rest of the pasuk says im tivayun bayu shuvu etayu, and that idea means that if you want, if you turn to God, if you request it, possibly in tefillah or in tshuva, then it can come. Then geula can come. So again, it's in our power in terms of how the day and the night will play out. This is a nice idea when we think about Havdalah and what we daven for at the end of Havdalah as we commence a new week, that we have the power through our actions in each day of the week to influence the future geula. Starting in Pasuk Yud Gimel, we have the last masa of this perek, a nevuah for Arav, Arabia. The influence of Islam is something that resonates with us today and brings up those words told to us about Yishmael back in Sefer Breshit, Yado Bakol, his hand is in everything, V'yad Kolbo, and the hand of everyone is in him. We're told the Masa is Ba'arav, and it's possible that the Navi is speaking in Arav itself, and speaks of caravans of people who are wandering in the desert who don't have water. The people of Tema should greet the Didanim, who are nomads, with Mayim and Lechem, which may strike a chord to what we know happened for us when we were in the desert, and we also turned to people, to nations, asking for Mayim and Lechem. And we know that the nations of Ammon and Moab didn't necessarily give it to us graciously at all, and we talk about that back in Sefer Dvarim as well. And again, it was in the same area of what may be present-day Saudi Arabia. Some, like Rashi, translate the nation Didanim actually to be from the word Dod, cousins, since they are family members. And then there's that expectation of help to offer to our family members. And again, we had that same unmet expectation from Ammon and Moab when we traveled through the Midbar. Kimi pnei charavot nadadu. We're told that the reason that the nation is wandering is because of charavot, because of swords. They're running away because of the weapons of the enemy. In a very short time, Kedar is going to fall. Kedar was mentioned in Breshit Perek Chafhei 25 as the second son of Yishmael. We see the keshet, the bow, is central to these psukim as the weapon used by these people, which is reminiscent of the descriptions of Yishmael back from Sefer Breshit. This nevuah could also be referring to battles that Ashur fought in the Midbar, in the desert, with these nations as well. And we're told that Hashem orchestrated all of this because he's the God of Israel and to benefit the people of Israel. Hashem caused these nations to fight each other on our behalf. The message from this last part of the perek to the people of Yehuda is, on one level, not to get involved in these battles between nations because it's already decreed that these nations will fall, and it's possible they're being punished because of what they may have done or will do to the Jewish nations themselves. Hashem has a master plan. Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel will also speak in a later historical time period about the nations of Tema, Dedan, and Kedar, and will be more focused on the relationship between these nations and Bavel, whereas here, during the time period of Yeshayahu, it may be more about the relationship between these nations and Ashur. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer teaches that our Nevuah speaks of three battles that Bnei Yisrael will have before the coming of Mashiach, learned out from Pasuk Tedvav from our Perek. In Pasuk Tedvav, it says, Kimi pnei charavot nadadu, I read those words before, that they are wandering because of swords, mipnei cherev netusha, because of an outstretched sword, umipnei keshet drucha, because of a bow that is bent, umipnei koved milchama, and because of the pressure, the heaviness of the war. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says that the three battles are referred to in this pasuk. One, the first one, will be in a forest, corresponding to the words cherev netusha. One will be at sea, mipnei keshet drucha, the second phrase, and one will be in the big city in Rome, in Edom itself, which will be the heaviest, mipnei koved milchama. The third one will be the worst, and then we're told by the Midrash that Mashiach ben David will witness these battles, will come to Eretz Yisrael from the land of Edom, as we will see ourselves in one of the last prakim of Sefer Yeshayahu. Thank you for studying together, Li'ilui Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.